Hello, you're listening to the Brainy Speech Therapist podcast. We're your hosts, Helen McLean and Jan McIntosh Brown. Here, we aim to look at all aspects of brain injury, from the research to the rehabilitation, and always through the lens of speech and language therapy. Hi there, welcome to the next episode of the Brainy Speech Therapist podcast. We're your hosts, Helen McLean
and Jan McIntosh Brown.
Today we're speaking to Pauline Downey. Pauline is the Head of Profession for Speech and Language Therapy in NHS Lanarkshire and is also the representative for Scotland on the RCSLT board. Pauline, thank you so much for giving up some of your time to chat with us.
So Pauline, say hello and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello, thanks very much for inviting me. It's an absolute honour and privilege to be with you today. So, a wee bit about me. As Helen said, I'm the professional lead for speech and language therapy in Lanarkshire. And I'm also the country representative on the Board of Trustees for the Royal College of Speech and Language Therapists. I've been done that for 2 years. And I'm also the chair of Scottish Managers Network as well, which has been a really good support during COVID especially, I have to say.
So you're a busy person.
I am.
Well, that makes us even more grateful for you giving up some of your time this evening to come and chat with us. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you've arrived at where you are today with all these many hats that you wear.
So I mean, I had quite a shaky start into the profession, I'm going to say. I'm just going to admit that I started off doing a different degree and dropped out of that, then started this degree after I had my son. And realised I had to actually get a real job and actually support him. And I thought speech and language therapy looked really interesting because it was working with people's communication and language, which I was really interested in. And so I realised that it's actually 30 years since I graduated this year. So I'm giving away my age there a wee bit.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I think I get an extra day's annual leave.
These are the rewards. I think that's true, yes.
When you work for the NHS, these are the rewards. So I worked in England for a year and then actually came to Lanarkshire in 1993. And I have done various jobs in Lanarkshire. I worked with children and adults and also adults with a learning disability. And I've worked in loads of different places in Lanarkshire because I always volunteered to cover everyone's sessions because I was really keen to find out more about supporting people with communication difficulties. And then I became the head at the hospital department in Hare Myers in, I think it was 1996. And I did that job for about 15 years. And then when the opportunity came up with the professional lead post, I applied for that and was successful. And I've been doing that for 10 years now, which I just can't even believe. So I've had a lot of opportunities in Lanarkshire and I've had a lot of support from speech and language therapists and other professionals. I feel really fortunate to work here.
Mm. And is there one role for you that really stands out, like just something that you really enjoyed?
I really enjoy my current role. I get a lot of opportunities to work with the staff. I don't have as much clinical contact now that I used to have, but I actually just absolutely love seeing staff develop, earn, if you like, gain their skills and competencies. I really strongly believe in developing people with their CPD, which is continuous professional development. And I was talking to Jan earlier about our newly qualified practitioners, and we have quite a lot of people newly qualified because we had some funding to recover from COVID, and we've employed about 10 new people. So it was absolutely lovely to get to know them over video, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. We couldn't all be in the same room, and I just do really love to see people develop and you find your own interests. Mm.
And so is there a typical day for you that maybe kind of you could run through in terms of your, do you know, around kind of what your role involves?
I can tell you about today. So there's no real typical day because it's a very varied job. So today, every day now, we start with a daily safety brief where I have to know who's at work, who's not at work, why they're not at work. And that's every morning at 9 o'clock. And then today I then had a meeting with Partnership, it's the union, and some of the staff who work in the neurodevelopmental service, because there's probably going to be some changes to that. So we were working with the Partnership and staff side. Then I had some meetings with some of my adult service because we actually have some funding to have some staff in the COVID-19 rehabilitation service. So that was good. So we've got a couple of people who are really, really keen to do that, really interested in supporting people with long COVID and their rehabilitation needs. Then had a meeting with my children and young people team leaders to look at workforce. And so it was quite a varied day. A lot of it's working with people, and I have to protect my time when I have to do pieces of work myself, because otherwise I could just be in meetings all day and then not actually do the work in between. Mm. So it's a challenge, but I do have control really over my own diary and how I spend my time. So I think that's really important.
And do you get any support in your role? So...
Oh yes, I do. I do feel as though I get a great deal of support. And I mentioned earlier what a supportive place Lanarkshire is mm-hmm. to work in. And I get support from my colleagues who are also AHP leads, so head of physio, occupational therapy, and a whole lot of colleagues. I get support from my own leadership team, mm-hmm. support from the associate director mm-hmm. of AHPs. And also just all of my staff. And actually, I mean, I wanted to actually read you an email that I got from a member of staff today, which actually made me quite emotional.
Yeah, lovely.
And this is my support. And this person said to me, "I would just like to say thanks for all you do for all of us. You've guided us all through COVID and really dark days. And I, for one, will never be able to repay you for that. Thank you for always caring. Not only for staff, but all our patients, and always do so with a smile." So you can imagine how I felt reading that email today. And this just makes everything worthwhile.
Yeah. That is that thing, isn't it, where sometimes just having that kind of reflected back to you that, we're doing a good job and mm-hmm. and that people appreciate the time and the effort and the hard work that you put in. Yeah, because Jan, you kind of touched on maybe, and you both kind of mentioned some of the challenges that are there, and just with you saying about even just today, one meeting after another, but very different kind of caseloads being looked at, and mm-hmm. For you to kind of wear all these different hats, mm-hmm. I wonder, is that difficult to kind of switch between, okay, this is what I'm talking about for the next hour and a half, and then a short 5 minute break or whatever it might be into something else. Is that, how do you manage that?
I think it is challenging. I mean, you obviously do have to do some preparation beforehand, mm-hmm. You know, make sure you're aware of what's happening. And also I have, you know, a lot of staff who are absolute experts in their roles. And, you know, I'm not doing this on my own. I'm doing this with teams and teams of people in Lanarkshire. You know, it is challenging, but it's really enjoyable, I would say.
That's a really, I just think it's such a good point to reflect on, the fact that you're there in that leadership role mm-hmm. saying, I don't have all the information, mm-hmm. I need mm-hmm. to look to those around me to get that, because I don't know, I feel like certainly I've had encounters with people that you can think, they're acting like they know it all, but clearly they don't. and so there's something quite kind of humbling about having someone in a leadership position to say, actually, I need to look to you for that, mm-hmm. That guidance, you know. And I think that's been part of what makes a good leader, isn't it? To know where you're not quite up to speed with everything and where your gaps are.
Yeah, I think you have to be honest about what you know and what you don't know, but can find out. And I remember something that my predecessor said to me when I took up this role. And she said, Pauline, you can go a mile wide or a mile deep, but you can't do both. And so I've always remembered that, of knowing, you know, I feel as though I've got an overview of a lot of things and some really in-depth knowledge about a few things. But fortunately, I have other people with the in-depth knowledge that I can call on. So it's really important to be honest, I think, about what you know and who else needs to be in the room and involved in what's happening.
So it sounds a lot like you're facilitating your teams.
Yes, I think that's a good word for it, is facilitation. And that, you know, you can't. We have 170 staff in Lanarkshire, so you can't all go in a room together. And I do feel I'm representing speech and language therapy. And also other times you're representing allied health professions as a speech and language therapist. And so it is important then to, you know, you said humility, and the opposite of that of a thing is arrogance, of knowing, thinking that you know everything. That, to me, that's not the right approach at all, is to actually ask and listen to what, you know, what people are telling you.
Yeah, so that asking for advice and seeking people's input. And I know you spoke earlier about that's one of your passions, is supporting people to develop and achieve their competencies and allowing them to flourish, which, you know, sounds like that's your approach.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah, I mean, people have an amazing range of skills, and not just in their work lives, in their personal lives as well, that they, because they bring them their whole selves to work, as I hope I do, bring my whole self to work. So you're not just bringing your speech and language therapy knowledge, you're bringing everything else, your experience, your knowledge, your creativity, your innovation. That all comes to work with you, and you can draw on all of that.
So, do you feel that there are limited career options for speech and language therapists? I mean, how do you, so you've sort of taken a path, are there other paths that we can consider?
Absolutely, other paths, yes. I mean, I've been very fortunate in the opportunities that I've had. But there are certainly a lot of other career options. I think the speech and language therapy training does give you an amazingly good grounding in so many things, not the least of which is communication. I mean, if we're not the experts in communication, who is really?
Fundamental to human life.
Yes. Absolutely, and a human right. And so, you know, there's the leadership path, but there's also clinical leadership roles. For people who are absolute experts in their subject, like brain injury being an example, people with stroke, obviously people that work with people with autism. There's so many career pathways out there, but I do feel that there is a ceiling there for careers, and I know there's quite a lot of work on advanced practice for allied health professions going on just now. In a similar way to our nursing colleagues, have got a lot of opportunities for advanced practice. I think that is changing. There's also career options within, some of my staff have gone to work in NHS Education Scotland. I've got somebody who's seconded there just now, and they've created a lot of training and learning programmes, so I'm really proud of them as well. yes.
And yeah, I was reading an article, I think, from the most recent issue of the Bulletin by Laura Mitzi, about developing leadership skills, and I think it was interesting, she kind of commented on sometimes us lacking a bit of self-confidence and putting ourselves forward for those sorts of challenges, but actually the huge benefits that can be there, because as you say, we're communication specialists, and so much of leadership, I guess, is about good communication. And I think she kind of said, you know, that actually other AHPs and other people in other kind of medical and nursing roles really benefited from having speech and language therapists in a kind of leadership role. It's just, I think it's interesting to hear someone else say that actually we are maybe not good at putting ourselves forward in that way sometimes. But it's interesting that you're saying that there's maybe more of that coming through now.
think so. It is interesting, and I did read that article as well. And Laura was talking about one of the programmes in England for, I think, I can't remember what it's called, but it was about developing leaders for the future. And Scotland's got a programme through NHS Education Scotland as well, which I was very fortunate to get a place on, called Leading for the Future. And that was amazing. It was about adaptive leadership. And that's probably the best leadership course I've been on. Because you can, there's a plenty of courses available, but there's also just the experiential part of, you know, we're told that everybody can be a leader. Mm-hmm. And so to step forward into the role, I think it's interesting you talk about confidence. And I hear a lot of people talking about imposter syndrome and thinking they're not good enough. But I think the thing is to actually know yourself first. If you're trying to lead other people, you need to actually know yourself and to know what your own strengths and weaknesses. And of course, we've all got a blind spot, and we hope we've got a lot of critical friends that are going to just gently say, and mine is, Pauline, rein yourself in. These are great ideas, but we can't do all of them. I have people that will say that to me, and I really appreciate that. So I think definitely knowing yourself, and then getting to know other people, because I think all of leadership is really built on relationships and compassion. There's a lot just now about, you've probably seen Michael West, who spoke at the last Royal College of Speech and Language Therapy conferences, and actually also spoke at one of our senior nursing, midwifery and allied health profession meetings in Lanarkshire. We were so privileged. And he will talk about compassionate leadership, and that is about attending, listening to people, understanding them, empathy, and then helping them. Now think of those, that list of characteristics, speech and language therapists, empathic, we understand, we listen, we want to help. So we're natural leaders, really.
We're only a little bit biased. But yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying is so true, that we do bring a lot of skills and abilities, and I have had leadership roles myself in the past, and I think one of the things that, you know, it's leading from behind, isn't it? It's about you putting your teams forward, you putting your people forward, like you say, accepting your own things that you don't know, and using those other people's expertise and acknowledging them as well as being the people who are the experts. We're not the experts in everything, and being the expert in yourself is the first step, isn't it? You
know? Yes.
And hey, imposter syndrome, it's got my name on it, you know? So, yeah. And I'm a good starter, but I'm not a good finisher. So,
a completer, finisher, and your team.
Yes, please. You'll be fine. Come work with me.
But what you're saying about compassionate leadership, I wonder, particularly in the light of the last couple of years, we were talking before we started to record about COVID, and about the pressures that everyone's been under. And I know within Lanarkshire, at the time that COVID kind of really hit and the first lockdown happened, there was changes that you had to make decisions about staffing and things, you know, different people working with different caseloads and just the impact of that. I wonder if you wouldn't mind speaking a little bit about that time and potentially, you know, the very specific challenges of leadership through that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a challenging time, and it continues to be challenging. It seemed, although there was a big build-up, it did seem to happen very suddenly, and we didn't really feel all that prepared for it. So we kind of went within a couple of weeks to being in complete lockdown, from the first case of somebody with COVID to being in complete lockdown. And all of the leads had to make decisions about what part of your service was absolutely critical and could it be taken down, and what part of your service was more routine and where staff could be redeployed to help the wider NHS workforce. So that was really difficult for everybody. And I think also the difficulty was in how valued people felt, because I think the people that were redeployed potentially felt my job's not as important. But it wasn't to do with being important, it was to do with priorities. and what was needed at the time. And so my viewpoint was just to treat everybody with compassion and kindness. I had a look at all of the Action for Happiness about being kind and being calm, and just tried to really be that way and model that. And I'm not afraid to tell you that I did find it personally difficult, and actually did take advantage of the coaching that was offered through the Wellbeing Hub. And I found that very, very helpful in kind of grounding me.
Mm.
And I still use some of those techniques today. My main focus was on staff keeping well, keeping safe, and obviously keeping our clients and patients as safe as possible. But there was a whole lot of things to learn about infection control, all of the procedures and how safe they were or not to carry out. And there was a great deal of communication to be had because people were very, very anxious. And so I did try to keep people up to date. At one point I was doing a daily bulletin to the staff, and then we did change that to weekly. And now it's just a bit more intermittent when things need to be done. But I think staff did appreciate being kept in the loop about what was happening because the time was so stressful.
And I think it was, as you said, Pauline, and as everybody's experienced, it was a really challenging time. I know even in our small service, which is part of a larger organisation, a lot of what I was hearing was that our organisation is too slow, it's not responding quickly enough, the government's saying this, and it's taking a week or two for us to actually action things. And then there was a lot of anxiety about, as you were saying as well, what is priority, what is essential, the choices for us were that our service users would be staying in the rooms doing nothing versus coming and doing some sort of interactive activity. I mean, what is feasible, So there were, I can totally understand the difficulties that you were facing.
And I imagine as well, did you have a feeling of almost having to accept that you're not going to be able to please everyone?
Absolutely. And I suppose I want to temper what I've said as well with some of the positive things that happened, because we did accelerate a lot of changes that were already happening in our service. And for one good example is the use of Near Me, the kind of video appointments, which we had just started off using with people with voice difficulties and also some older children in our remote areas. And so we'd used it with about six people. And now, it just accelerated so quickly. Staff had to learn how to use this new technique. And we also developed a massive range of resources for working with children, and actually launched a YouTube channel with a lot of videos and resources, particularly for children and their parents. So there were positive things that came out of it as well.
I think that is the thing, isn't it, about any kind of challenging time.
Yes,
if things are just easy going the whole time, we never challenge ourselves, and we never look for new ways of working necessarily, but sometimes it's
No pain, no gain.
Yeah, as awful as COVID has been and the stress, then I certainly think, there's a lot that probably staff have learned about themselves. There's ideas that have, like you say, have been able to kind of be pushed forward more quickly than would have happened otherwise. And I think we've probably, everyone working in the NHS or in any healthcare settings probably learned a lot about what their abilities are. I think it's always good to reflect back on the positives, because it's quite easy to get mired in what's been so difficult about stuff, hasn't it?
Lost in the detail, and like we were talking earlier, being too involved in the news and what's happening.
Yes.
I mean, that was one of the strategies that came out, wasn't it, of just trying to trust a little bit and trying to limit your access to all this information so that you feel okay. And then we've got people like Pauline who are sifting through all of that information and saying, this is what you really need to know.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully. Hopefully getting it right most of the time, not all of the time.
Well, we fail forward.
Oh, I like that, yes. That.
I like that, yeah.
And so I suppose slightly kind of moving on to a slightly different topic, but I suppose it's that balancing the kind of operational management mm-hmm. stuff, that aspect of your job, which sounds like that takes up the majority of your time. Do you find that you can still balance a little bit of clinical skills in there?
At the moment, I haven't really been able to balance that. Before the pandemic, I was still working. Clinical work was in the video fluoroscopy clinic, which is x-rays for people with swallowing difficulties. But I had to step out of that because, one, the procedures were so difficult, the standard operating procedures were so different that I didn't have time to actually learn all of that bit of how to work clinically. But I'm actually looking at trying to restart my clinical practice because I miss it and I miss the patients. So yes, the balancing is always difficult, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I think what I was saying to Jan earlier was most of us, if not all of us, go into a role of speech and language mm-hmm. therapy, physiotherapy, occupational therapy, whatever it might be, not necessarily to become the leader mm-hmm. of that profession. Mm-hmm. It's because we enjoy the clinical, the hands-on, mm-hmm. don't we? So we were talking a bit about that difficulty with actually becoming a leader, and I know you kind of said you were that kind of having knowing yourself, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But in terms of that actual support and developing your leadership mm-hmm. skills and almost we engage in reflective practice as clinicians. Mm-hmm. Are there opportunities for you to kind of touch base with people in that way to reflect on how you're doing as a leader and to develop your own kind of skills as a leader?
Yes, definitely. And I think I mentioned earlier that I feel as I have a really good network of support mm. in Lanarkshire, and I also have kind of peer supervision that goes on as well. And within the Board of Trustees, we also support one another, and we all come from quite different backgrounds, and we also have lay trustees, which is fascinating actually, to work with people who are not speech and language therapists because they have a completely different perspective on what the role is. And we get training and support of being board members, I feel as though I have a great deal of support. Yeah.
No, that's really interesting because I think you hear that phrase of it's lonely at the top, don't you? Uh-huh, but it doesn't sound like it sounds like you've got a good network around you. And it's, can you say a bit more about the lay trustees then? That's
yes,
new to me.
Yes, so the Royal College of Speech and Language Therapists is quite a progressive board. So one of the things they're looking at just now is towards a diverse board. So that diversity is the lay trustees, but they're also, or we should say, we're also looking at diversity in terms of like ethnicity. You know that the RCSLT responded to the Black Lives Matters campaign, and our chief executive officer is Kamini Gadduk. She is a person of colour as well. So, and I've been doing some of the anti-racism training that's also on the RCSLT website. So there's diversity in terms of the speech and language therapy profession, but also diversity in terms of skills. So for example, it's the RCSLT is a charity, and so the main contribution is from its membership fees. And so we've got a finance person, we've got a finance board, and then we've got a lay trustee that's working on the digital offering and the websites, and then we've got a lay trustee who is looking at some of the human resources processes about how the RCSLT works. And so we actually did a virtual visit because all the lay trustees have to come and do a visit with a speech and language therapy service. And so that was great because they're based in London. This person's based in Oxford, I think. And they were able to come and do a visit because we're working virtually and digitally just now. So that was quite exciting. But I do think when you look at speech and language therapy, we are one of the least diverse professions there. And I think that's really important to look at that because I was reading something the other day about how diverse teams actually perform better. And I thought it was quite interesting because, you know, not only do we not have a lot of gender diversity, but we really don't reflect the population at all in terms of other protected characteristics. So the board's moving towards having a nomination committee so that we can balance the board, so it's not, you know, to, I suppose, to challenge the white privilege on the board, and that's really what it's about. So it's fascinating to be involved in that, and I think the RCCLT, as I said, have always been a progressive organisation.
There's lots of change happening, really, at the moment, isn't there? Obviously, we've spoken about kind of the almost the forced changes that COVID's brought, but and there's just also lots of societal changes in the last few years, and I think you kind of see on social media and things. I think we've maybe mentioned the SLT Time podcast, which I think is largely on YouTube, which is very much about kind of diversity, isn't it? And I remember just you saying that about how important that change is. And I saw something on Twitter, I think, a while ago, and it was from a speech and language therapy student saying, I've just had an email from my upcoming placement educator, and her email signature in brackets had her preferred pronouns. And this student is identifies as non-binary, if I remember right. And she said, they said it was such a small thing, but actually made a huge difference. And you just think, if that sort of, if that can happen on that level, imagine the difference it would make seeing a board that's much more diverse. And I suppose it's about representation, isn't it?
I think so. And that, you know, that's about inclusion. And that is what we actually want for people with communication and swallowing difficulties. We want them to be included in society. Because what we know of people with communication difficulties is that very often their voice isn't heard. And I think probably that's why a lot of us come into the profession of speech and language therapy, because we feel so passionate about communication. And the inclusion agenda, it's great how things are happening, but I do have some small worries about, you know, the slogan of Build Back Better, and about digital inclusion, particularly digital poverty, and the fear, I suppose I have a fear that the inequalities will widen, the equality gap will widen in health because of the COVID pandemic, and particularly for people with communication difficulties. So I think it's absolutely important that we do focus on, I don't know if people are aware that there's now a new symbol for communication access, which is very similar to, you know, the other access symbols of the wheelchair. So Communication Access UK, you can look that up. And there's a training programme which is all electronic. I think that would be a really good resource for people to look at.
We can put a link in the notes for that as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because I think that we might have mentioned that in a previous, because I think Shan, when we spoke to her from Red Pepper Nutrition, she had not long done her training. But yes, I think
we talked last episode about the digital issue, about not wanting to discriminate people because of digital access in rural Wales, you know.
I think it's that thing, isn't it? It shouldn't be one thing entirely or another. You know, as you mentioned, near me, the video platform has been good in Lanarkshire because we do have some remote areas, and it does save some people a long drive or public transport that they can't access because it might just not be there. But and I know I've had some patients who, like, it, you know, it's great that, you know, we can still do video contact, but equally that there's a lot of people who don't have that access. And we would be doing them a disservice if we went fully digital, wouldn't we? Which hopefully as well, I think we're a hands-on profession, so we like to have a chat to people face-to-face, don't we? So.
Yeah, that would exclude a lot of people, as you were saying, Helen. As speech and language therapists, we're familiar with the concept of total communication. And so I think this is along those lines of, there's not just one solution to anything. And there's some terminology in leadership that talks about wicked problems. which is problems for which there's no real known solution. You've not encountered it before. And the solution is called a clumsy solution. So there's nothing elegant. It's like cobbling together everything you know, using all your contacts, using your networks to find a clumsy solution. I just like that idea because life isn't perfect and we're not perfect. So
it's nice to be clumsy sometimes. Yes. Let's make a mess and then we can sort it out. So it sounds like you've talked about a couple of challenges that face mm-hmm. our profession at the current time. Are there some opportunities that we should be thinking towards?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we talked about diversity being a challenge. The other big challenge really is about the workforce. I think that's not just a challenge for speech and language therapy. It's a challenge for a lot of professions. And we were talking earlier about, you know, wouldn't it be lovely if we could have apprenticeship as a route? And I was reflecting, and we had an assistant several years ago who, a speech and language therapy assistant, went off to do the course for 4 years and, you know, obviously took a massive cut in salary. It was, you know, financial implications. She came back and she's been a speech and language therapist with us. So there are a couple of places in England who are trialling an apprenticeship route, and I'd be really keen to look at that in Scotland, because I think, you know, we do have to be more diverse in our workforce. And I was talking to Jan earlier about my own son, who left school at 16 and is now 24 and is actually now doing a degree. And he took the most circuitous route around. But I think it just shows there is more than one way to do things. Mm-hmm. And we mustn't be constrained by traditional boundaries.
A bit like your clumsy solutions.
Clumsy solutions.
Yeah. And personally, I think there's definitely something to be said for having a bit of life behind you mm-hmm. when you're coming into a job role. And I think, personally, anyway, working in the brain injury yes. client group, you know, people are going through difficult situations, and I think mm-hmm. you know, to be able to bring a bit of knowledge and a bit of empathy from your own life experience of what mm-hmm. you know, you can kind of get there, and I think people, I've certainly had patients say that to me, like, oh, I can see, you know, you might not have really mm-hmm. necessarily gone and told them much about yourself, but I've just occasionally had a patient say, mm-hmm. I can just tell that you get it, do you know?
Yeah.
And I think that rapport and that kind of relationship that you can have with patients is really important to get them feeling that they trust you,
mm-hmm.
that they're
mm-hmm.
going to benefit so much more. And I suppose maybe that links in a bit with the leadership aspect as well. Like you're saying, you know, honesty, that I don't have all the answers,
yes,
you know.
Yeah.
You arrive at clumsy solutions sometimes, and that's okay. You know?
I think you're right. The empathy is the key word that I was thinking of. And I was thinking back to our student days when we had to write our treatment plans. And always the very first thing was build rapport.
Mm-hmm.
That is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as well, the recognition that the person in front of you, your patient or your client or whatever the word you use them, they know themselves best. They've got all their own life experiences. And, you know, for speech and language therapists working with children, very much we're working with the whole family and parents and carers, and we have to listen to what's important to them, to what matters to them, in order to do our job properly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Pauline, thank you so much for all the insights that you've shared. We like to ask, before we finish the podcast, if there's something, a key message or a key thought that you would like the listeners to take away with them. What do you think? What would you like us to hear?
I think the key thought is about communication, how important communication is. It is a human right to be able to communicate, and therefore communication isn't just speech. Communication can be all sorts of things. So watch and listen when people are trying to communicate with you, and do the best you can to help them. And that's about human relationships. So that's my thought for the day.
I'm inspired.
Yes. No, I think that's a really a really, you know,
pertinent.
Yeah, pertinent point to kind of bring it all to back to, down to. So thank you so much, Pauline, for chatting with us and sharing your thoughts. And it's been so interesting. Obviously, I will say that, you know, I've kind of known you for a few years. Yes. And it's just so lovely to kind of speak to you in this sort of environment and to hear your thoughts on things. So appreciate it so much, you giving up your time.
Thank you very much for asking me. It's an absolute pleasure to see you again, Helen, and to meet you, Jan.
Thank you. Likewise.
So that's all for this episode. Thanks as always for listening to us. There's a few things that will pop into the show notes around perhaps the YouTube channel for the Children Young People Service and the communication access symbol training. I think there's maybe some other things in there as well, but we will check that out. So until next time, we'll say cheerio for now.
Cheerio from Jan.
The opinions and views expressed in this podcast are of the individual and should not be considered professional advice. If you have a brain injury, suspect you have a brain injury, or think someone you know has a brain injury, please seek dedicated professional advice.